I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. Hello, everyone. This is Vic Cohen broadcasting live from downtown Los Angeles' Skid Row Studios. The name of the show is It's a Fair Question. Because on this show, every question is a fair question. No question is too personal or ever off limits. And tonight, our guest is a very funny lady. And she's sitting right across from me. And I just want to talk about her so much, but I think I should probably introduce her to you, because just talking about her would be really a waste of her time. Isn't that true?
It might be true, Vic.
Yes, and she is Felicia Michaels. Hello. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Vic.
Yes. I love your voice.
Oh, thank you.
It's very cute. Yes, she's 12.
I know. I sound 12. It used to be so much worse, but now, thankfully, all the cigarette smokes.
That's what it is.
I don't actually smoke cigarettes. But no, but it's a lot lower. It used to be really high. It was very, very annoying.
I think it's cute. And I heard the old voice. And I thought that was cute, too.
It was pretty hyped up, yes.
It's very good. Now, Felicia Michaels is a great name.
Thank you, Vic Cohen.
Yes. Vic Cohen, a little ethnic. I'm not sure if it's a great stage name.
Oh, it's a perfect stage name.
It fits me.
Yes.
I'm still not sure about the Vic. I'm working on it. I don't feel like a Vic.
You are so a Vic.
Really?
Yes, you're such a Vic.
I just don't. I feel like Vic should be selling cars.
You're being a Vic right now, so just stop it, all right?
Right. Well, I understand that's your real name, right? Felicia Michaels.
It is not my real name.
Oh, uh-huh. Wikipedia has been lying.
It is not my real name.
What's your real name? Bob? Bob Michaels?
No, actually, my first name is Felicitas, which is, I know, I don't look like a Felicitas.
Oh, no, you do.
No, I do not.
Do you feel like one?
I feel like one on the inside. But it's a family name, so I actually grew up as Bobby.
Oh my God, and I said Bob.
Yes, yeah.
And I was right.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
I'm so serious, because when I was a baby and I had a brother who was 17 months older, it's such a boring story, but they brought me home and he couldn't say Felicitas, because why would a 17-month-old be able to say that? So he would say it. Instead of baby, he'd be like, oh, it's the Bobby. So then I was called Bobby until I was 18 and wanted to be sexy. And then I was like, it's Felicia, everybody.
But it really was Felicia legally. Felicita.
It's Felicitas, yeah.
Felicitas. It sounds Spanish.
It's Latin for the happy one.
Really? Are you that happy?
I'm pretty darn happy, generally.
It's a lot of pressure.
It is a lot of pressure.
What's Latin for the depressed one? That would be me.
I don't know. What would that be?
I always feel like when you get a name and it's something very positive, there's that pressure to live up to it.
Yeah, you know? maybe.
I love the name Yale, but if my kid went to junior college.
Yeah, then you'd be embarrassed.
I would be like, not that I have any problem with junior college.
Well, you could name your kid junior college and maybe he'd go to Yale. And
I like that.
That would be a bonus.
That's
right?
A great idea. Yeah. This imaginary kid I've never had.
Yes.
Or maybe we'll never have.
Do you
want
kids?
I would. Are you offering?
You can have one of mine.
I've seen you. We've got two boys, right?
I have two boys.
Yeah,
yes,
they're very cute.
They're very cute. Yeah.
I'll take them.
You will?
Yes. I don't think you're going to give them away that quick.
I'm not going to give them away that quick because it was hard to get them because they're adopted, which is cool. Because
is that true?
Yes, they're adopted. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, it's good because I'm divorced, so they don't look like the ex.
That's funny.
Such a true story.
Well, they say the truth is the funniest.
That's true.
So if you'd like to give us a call here, the number is 800-893-9562. That's 800-893-9562. Just to give you listeners, if you don't know who Felicia Michaels is, she is an award-winning comic. She won the America Comedy Awards as the funniest female.
Yes.
That's
many
a lot.
Many years ago, yes.
Yeah, that's a big deal, huh?
It was at the time. It was fun. It was exciting, yeah.
Well, that sounds really cool. And I love that you were on Star Search.
You know what? Sometimes there's this one guy that books me and he always brings me up as a Star Search winner. And everyone is like, what? Because no one really remembers Star Search. But it was a fantastic fun thing. Ed McMahon was obviously the host, and when you would go at that time, they shot it on a I think it's a Nickelodeon building on Sunset now, across from CNN, right by CNN.
Yeah,
there's,
I know
like
where that is.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
on Sunset Boulevard.
And they used to shoot the Star Search there. And so they had everyone else in like this cafeteria sized dressing room, except the spokesmodels were right next to Ed McMahon, like on the other side, the nicer side of the theater. I always thought that was very suspicious.
That there was some shenanigans going
on. Yeah. But then, you know, it's Ed McMahon. You got to. But I like that he kind of did that.
Yeah. Well, let's. What I'd love to do right now is share a little clip from from your appearance on Star Search. Can we roll that? Here we go.
For someone who is sensitive and caring, but those kind of guys already have boyfriends.
That's an old clip.
My boyfriend's wild. He's always mad at me. You know, like lately, he says I've been watching too much TV. But I've been watching the news, and they've been saying stuff about disease and stuff. And they said if you think you're with someone who's scummy or promiscuous, you should make them wear one of those things, you know? You know. So I asked my boyfriend to wear one because he's a musician and they're scummy. And he goes, well, when I wear one, I can't feel anything. Well, finally, we're even.
Why?
You were shaking your head.
That's crazy talk. Well, that was so many years ago. That was so many years ago.
Right. Were you really dating a scummy musician?
I did live when I was 21 years old. I lived with this musician named Dan Jaross. It was actually Dan Jarossi, but get it? Dan Jaross. Dangerous.
Oh.
Dan Jaross.
Is that what you like, a bad boy?
No, I don't necessarily like a bad boy, but... he was in Beatlemania. That's what I remember about him. I do remember we moved in together and then we smoked a joint and then we played that board game Risk.
Uh-huh.
And we got to
How old was this guy?
No, like he was a little older than me. Yeah, no, I was the young one. He was like 10 years older than me. And we were going to play Risk and I was explaining the game to him because he was a drummer. He wasn't that smart. And I was going to explain the game to him. And then I was like, and then we're going to take over this, you know, you try to get the other country or whatever. And he's like, can't we all just get along? And I just remember thinking to myself, I have made a colossal mistake the night we moved in together.
Oh, and
I've never told anyone that story.
Well, how long did you guys live together?
We lived together for about a year. Yeah.
This is the thing that I find, this is what I like about my age. You know, I play 35 to 46.
So you're 52.
Yeah. No. But I never say my real age, but out here in Los Angeles, there's no upside. So I just give a range.
Right.
You know, I play 5'2 to 5'8.
Right. But you're 5'1.
I play 130 to 158.
Uh-huh.
I am 170.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
That.
I'm not. But what was I going to say? Oh, I forgot. Oh my God. Too much caffeine. It just hit me.
You drank a lot of caffeine.
I know. What was I saying before?
About age. About you don't give a specific age.
Oh, no. What did I say right before that? I cannot remember. It will come back to me. But one other thing I was really interested about with you and your career is that you were a Playboy model.
Well, I wasn't a Playboy model, but when I did Star Search, they had come to me. And they were putting together, and this is so many years ago, it's frightening, but they were putting together a girls of comedy like spread. But there wasn't, at that time, that many girl comics. And they were like, you know, like kind of lady-like, like, you know what I mean? They weren't young, hot chicks, rightfully so.
Well, like Joan Rivers.
Yeah, I mean, she was obviously then still pretty old, but yeah. There wasn't a lot of girl comics. So they had got a couple of actresses that had tried to do comedy and a bunch of stuff. And then they asked me to do it. And I just thought to myself, why would I be one vagina amongst many? You know what I mean? Like if I was going to do it, I would do me. And then about a year later, they came, maybe like 6 months later, they came and they asked me to do it. And I was immediately like, shit, yeah. You know, because when I was a little girl, my dad had tons of Playboys around and I used to read them when I was a kid. And
did you get turned on by them?
You know what? I did kind of get turned on by them, but I just thought that the women were so pretty. You know, like it was I was very attracted to it, and not in a weird way. I just thought it was very pretty.
Are you attracted to women? It is a fair question.
Oh, yeah. No. You know what? I was once attracted to a woman at Z Gallery. I have to, like, 5 years ago.
But me then too. Which one?
She looked like a teenage boy. So.
Oh, my God. I always say that the type of woman I like has the hips of a teenage boy.
Yes. Yeah.
It's weird. And then I get usually say that to gets kind of disgusted. And I've stopped saying that. So maybe I shouldn't have shared that.
Well, you shouldn't
here.
Say it on a first date or anything.
No, it's usually a last date. It becomes a last date fast, really fast.
I bet.
So with the Playboy thing, did you get to meet Hugh Hefner?
You know, I never, because honestly, when I did Playboy, I was 28 or 9 at the time, which was kind of old to do Playboy. And so it wasn't the end all for me. You know what I mean? So it had no allure in that way. Like, I could have went to the mansion, and I never did. And because I was serious about my comedy career. So, you know, it was just like a side note, like, oh, I get to do this and fulfill this ridiculous fantasy. And it was also, the great thing about that too, is because of how I looked, you know, a lot of people assume that I got a lot based on how I looked, and I think I did, because I don't think I was particularly that funny, you know, because it was at the very beginning of my career, in a sense. But doing the Playboy thing and just fucking girling out like that, you know what I mean, in a sense of stripping yourself completely down, made me able to leave my to leave then that at the door, that card of I'm just a girl, I'm just doing comedy. You know what I mean? Once I did the Playboy, it was like, all right, now I'm really a comic, and I got rid of that. You know, so it really freed me in that sense.
So doing the Playboy modeling somehow made you feel like one of the guys?
No, it just made, it was just like, okay. I mean, because at that time, that was a huge thing to be in Playboy. Now it means really not that much.
It's still a big deal.
It really doesn't mean that much. But at the time, that was you know, a pretty big deal in a weird way. But it was just like, you know, I have girled out to the maximum, had my hair sprayed up to the maximum, sucked my gut in front of the right light so it looks halfway decent, and someone who knew what they were doing with the camera took a great picture. Now, I don't give a fuck if I wear a dress or high heels ever again, you know, on stage. And now I can put that false pretense of what I perceive as myself as a woman. I can make that. Now it doesn't matter anymore because I, you know, did it to the umpteenth degree. I sold it out. I went and signed the magazines when I did the clubs. Like, I went, you know, it helped me sell numbers, and I did my thing. And then it was like, whew, now I can put the girl to the side, and I can really focus on truly learning how to be funny.
Well, I remember that reading that you, and hearing it in your comedy, that you started out really with a dumb blonde type persona, and you write that in your bio, from the Laugh Factory bio. Or they wrote it for you. I don't know who wrote it.
Right, that's it's an old bio.
But the idea there was a change in character, in now then being more of a, I don't know, like body, but saucy, kind of talking about sex more.
Well, I mean, at the time, I was one of the youngest women comics at the time for a long time. I mean, because there weren't that many comedians. And I started at the Comedy Store. When you start doing comedy, when you're 20 years old, 21 years old, I wasn't educated, I didn't go to college, and you're at the Comedy Store as a regular, you know, you don't have anything else in common with the audience, who the average age is, you know, 25 to 36, let's just say. I don't know if that's correct, but I'm going to just guess.
I think 37.
That. Yeah, okay. Jerk. Anyway, but let's just say that. And you're 20, 21 years old, you really don't have a lot of life experience to draw upon. And I wasn't a political comic. I'm more that now, and not even that much, but compared to then. So it was, that was the one common denominator I had, that I could talk to the audience. And I was at the club with the most renegade comedians there were. I mean, Kinison was,
I was just thinking of him when you said that.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, I had to go up after Paul Mooney, you know what I mean? Like, I was 20 years old or 21 years old. So it's, I had to learn quick, and I had to get big laughs quick, and I had to identify with something in the crowd, you know? And it was at a time when there were very few women, you know. This is like, I started at the Comedy Store in 1986. I mean, there were a handful of them, and they weren't really real go on the road type comedians. They were just, you know, actresses that were doing it. There were a couple at that time, but not that many. You know, it was a different thing.
The and I was just thinking that the women who were doing it then probably didn't really look like women. They looked more like the men.
It was just different. It was just different, you know. And then after me, like, 3 or 4 years after me, or even five, that's when Sarah Silverman came and a bunch of people like that. And then it really changed. It really changed. But it was hard in the beginning because, it was confusing to people.
Because what? You were so young?
Because young, and because of my voice, and because, you know, I talked about, you know, blowjobs all the time. You know what I mean? Like, people were just like, what is that? And then it's so funny because when my kids came, I took 8 years off doing comedy, and then I got back into it when I got divorced. And I was at some gig in like West Hollywood, like just getting back into it. And this girl, a comic, came up. She's like, oh my God, I know who you are. And you really changed it for women in comedy, like what we could talk about. And then she went on stage and she did the filthiest material that wasn't even material, that was so disgusting, that didn't even have a point, that didn't even have a punchline.
You inspired that.
And I was like, yeah, I literally was like, oh my God, and I inspired, and this is my fucking fault. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And who is that comic today?
I don't even remember her name, but I just remember thinking, oh my God, you know?
Well, it's, so being an attractive woman had its pluses and its minuses.
Yeah. People, you know, and that time people would always say, is it harder doing comedy when you're a woman? But my answer still stands. No, it's just hard doing comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard.
But I do think that there are a lot of men who kind of, particularly male comics, who have this like kind of thing up their ass about female comics. I don't get it, because I think funny is funny. It doesn't matter who the person is.
Yeah.
Did you ever experience that?
Not, you know, there have been times, like when I started back at doing comedy about 3 years ago, and 8 years is a long time to step away from comedy. I mean, no one really remembered. Some people, older people or, you know, club owners, but I had to start over again, and I was at some terrible gig because I didn't want to, you know, living in LA, I knew, you know, you don't want to get on stage where everyone can put their eyes on you until you're ready for everyone to put their eyes on you. That's the downfall of starting a comedy career in Los Angeles. And I had already learned that once. So there was this bowling alley called the Canoga Bowl.
I did some open mics
You
there.
Did? Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it was hideous.
Dante was the host.
Yes.
And anyone knows Dante, he was on Last Comic Standing for a bit. I don't know how long.
Yeah.
But that's one of his big advertisements.
Right. No, good for him. And,
yeah.
And so he was like, yeah, you should come down and do the Canoga Bowl. And he was very gracious to me and very kind. And I remember one time we walked in together and there was a bunch of guy comics. And you know how when guy comics are around a table and they're holding court. And
I remember those tables, the little circular tables.
Yes, in the back, right? And like usually when male comics hold court, there's one that's in charge and everyone kind of is like, oh, he's the one, right? Because he's the funniest one in the room. And Dante was like, hey, everyone, this is Felicia. And Felicia, had a one-star search in an American Comedy War, you know, a few years ago, and she knew Hedberg and worked on one of his, like his film or whatever. And then this guy says, I don't understand why everyone loved Hedberg. They think he's a god and he's nothing. And I was like, what? And I go, well, who are your gods? And then other comics started throwing out names like of other famous comics from the past. And then someone said Lenny Bruce. And he was like, Lenny fucking Bruce. He's so overrated. And then I was smoking a cigarette sitting at this table now. And Dante was there and there's like five or six guys. And then I go, well, you know, now that you've said that, I'm going to have to call bullshit and call everything you say into question because you really don't know what you're talking about. And he stands up and he gets really angry and he's like, look, you fucking whore, right? And I know you don't really like cussing, so I'm sorry.
No. It was the word look that bothered me.
Yeah. So.
No, you can say anything.
Okay. So then I had this lit cigarette in my hand, so I threw it in his face. And then he like started to jump after me, and Dante dragged me out of the room, and like the other comics kind of held him back. And, you know, that's how you have to be as a girl comic sometimes.
I think that's how you have to be as a comic.
Yeah.
The hardest thing for me is I've felt at times some mean-spiritedness.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where they don't want to, if you happen to be working on new material, you go to a small room where it's mostly comics. It often is very clicky. So the people who are friends are laughing at each other because they're really just a bunch of people hanging out, you know, versus really maybe trying pure material. But there is a bit of sometimes not like rooting for, but the real successful people seem to really enjoy other people's success. I have found more so. I don't know that.
Yeah.
Not your experience?
No. You know, honestly, like when you have an experience like that night, I literally drove home like laughing like, yes, I am back. And now that comic, like when I see him, he loves me. You know what I mean? Like, You have to prove yourself in that way as a comedian. And so there are girl comics and then there are comics that are girls. And so it's a nice thing to move from being a girl comic because I never really felt that way because I feel more like I'm a comic that's just a girl. And when the other comedians accept that about you, there's never a difference after that, you know.
Right, and it's really interesting because you are so feminine and pretty and, you know, yet you really come across as, you know, I'm getting to know you and from your stories, you know, as being one of the guys in a sense.
Oh, you have to be, yeah. You have to be for sure.
Now, regarding, again, like the Playboy stuff and you come out here and you're really, you know, guys are probably paying extra attention to you because you are good looking and is there a casting couch out here that you ever experienced? And if so, could you describe it to me? Was it soft? What was the material?
Was it lumpy?
Yeah.
Was it made out of dirty linen?
Was it more of a love seat or was it?
You know what? I never really had, that kind of experience necessarily. I never really had that.
You were on the road for how many years for 35 weeks?
Oh, I did a good decade for 35 weeks a year on the road.
Now, a lot of the guys who talk about doing the road, the best stories are how they... made love.
Oh, how they got laid on the road.
And it was always the wait staff. And so I'm curious, being one of the guys, what are some of your escapades, if you have any?
That's the screwy part is you can't, because I was, you know, looked like I was having sex with everyone, like then it was like, I cannot have sex with anybody. You know what I mean? So for me, it was the opposite. I probably only had sex with one person in a club, like not in the club, but that I met as an audience member in the club, you know?
Yeah. And how was it?
It was awesome. It was this Cuban guy from Florida. It was fucking awesome.
Really? What made it awesome?
Because he was... good-looking Cuban guy from Florida. Need I explain, Vic?
Really? I don't know.
Let's just say it was.
Well, there's
nice.
Got to be more to the story.
No, we dated for about a year. No, he was totally.
Really?
Cute.
Unlike a guy comic, you have to go then date him. Like the guy,
I know. Yeah,
the guy comics
true.
Just
that's
screw,
true.
You know, fuck the girl and leave.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to. I'm in a relationship.
I have been in a comedy condo where someone has said, you know, blowjobs aren't cheating, like stuff like that. Yeah.
No, that's not fair. That's not right.
But then, well, who cares? I mean, they're being stupid, you know. You You can't take it serious.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I'm getting all serious.
No, I mean, they can't take it serious. That's another thing. When you're a girl comic and you're on the road, you know everybody's secrets. So after a while, they have to be nice to you because you're like, I know about fucking Tampa, dude. I know.
What's the craziest story? You don't have to name names, but the craziest thing you ever witnessed. Is there anything? Just insane?
Craziest thing? Well, the one thing but it's probably not what you're seeking, but, and when I think of the craziest thing, like I think of moments like being in Santa Barbara at a big theater there and being with, hanging out with Sam Kinison and his whole crew and being downstairs in the dressing room underneath the theater. And to me, what comes to mind is, being downstairs and people in the audience stomping their feet, wanting to see Sam Kinison and wanting to see comedy, and for comedy to be so appreciated and to feel so fucking feral, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what was crazy to me, you know? Like now, the bummer part, although there's good parts about being comedy now, the bummer part is it's not rock and roll like it used to be. You know what I mean? Like it used to be so fucking cool. You know? And it's cool now.
What changed?
It's a little more milk toasty, you know? It's not, you know,
Well, you had people like Dice Man, whether you liked him or not, who was very edgy, I guess, for in his character. And then, but that was not really him. That was a character. But with Kinison, it seemed to be who he really was, and a heightened version of him.
Right. Like to me, like when I think of the comic store, yeah, Dice was there, but to me, he wasn't part of that crew.
Who was? Sam Kinison and who else?
Well, it was like Kinison and,
was Rodney Dangerfield part of that?
He would come and hang out with Kinison. They would party a lot. And, you know, there were different circles at the Comedy Store, but it was just a different thing because it was a character that kind of took him over, you know? So it just was a different thing where he did hang out with some people, but Kinison had his whole crew, you know, like Carl LeBeau and then Alan Stevens and then, you know, a bunch of people like that. So it was just a whole different.
I'm curious. I really want to hear your answer on this. What makes in your mind a successful comic? And the reason I'm asking is because you walk into the Comedy Store. If anyone listening has not been to the Comedy Store, it's just loaded with headshots.
And I'll
look at these people. Half of them, three quarters of them, I don't know who they are.
Right.
Now, the question is, when I see that, I go, are these successful comics? And what is success as a comic? Does it mean they've had their own show or that someone like me walking through suddenly recognizes them? Or if you don't have the big photo at the Improv, you know, does that mean you've never made it?
Right.
And therefore the career is a complete disaster?
Right.
Or what is success in your mind?
Well, for me, like when I did it the first time, because I had two portions of my career, the first time I did it where I had a lot of success, you know, I did 23 different little comedy shows. I remember at that time they had a lot of comedy shows on everywhere. And I did a lot of those.
Did you ever do the Mondrian? There was a Mondrian show.
I might have.
And it was a woman named Beverly, something, a very crazy woman. But go on.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But like they did a lot of Comedy Central stuff, a lot of MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour.
I remember
like there
that.
Was a ton of shows like that. So I did a lot of that. And I did a lot of traveling. And I did, you know, and one Star Search. And I had five TV deals at one time and back to back to back to back. But
were those lucrative? I mean, were you making a lot of money?
Yeah. I was doing really well. But I always felt like so competitive and icky about it, you know, like is this what I should be doing? How come I don't have what that person has? You know, maybe because I'm not really a comic and blah 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 blah.
Do you ever get the question? Maybe I'm really not that funny, or I'm
totally.
And
yes, of course, yeah. And
I think we all do.
And you know, your comedy goes in and out of flavor, you know, your the flavor of what people want, it changes constantly. And now, in a weird way, I feel more in favor now, you know what I mean? Because now, like then I doubted myself so much, and now it's like, fuck it, this is what I'm doing. And so I feel more successful now because there's no other question that I'm going to be doing something else. I mean, there might be variety to what I'm doing or in a slightly different direction, but it's all based on comedy, where before it was like, should I quit and just get a regular job? Like, this is ridiculous.
Even with the success with the shows and the deals.
Yeah. Because you're so young and you feel competitive, and then, you know, people that have been doing it less time than you get something that you didn't get or that you weren't right for. And now you get, when you get to the point where you're like, this is just what I do, you become comfortable, you know, you accept it. And I think that's what makes you a success.
Oh, okay. That's a great answer. And what I find interesting about also is I think it just takes time to get there. It's really hard to do that. You know, I just think life gets...
Oh, yeah.
Someone said they... And I think this is really true. Someone... I was talking to this young woman. She's in her early 20s. And she really likes Lewis Black. And he said, you know, comics are like wine. You know, they have to have lived a little.
Right.
There has to be some age there.
Right.
And she saw that as a 20, you know, young 20-something woman. And I agree with her.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, when you've stuck with comedy for so long, you realize that, you know, in the beginning, some people got a lot of stuff for different reasons and you didn't get stuff. And some people become huge stars. And then, you know, through a 20-year time period, someone might have had a show on for 8 years and made a quadrillion dollars, but they're still trying to get that spot at the Laugh Factory 20 years later. They're still trying to get into clubs, you know, and they might have a lot of money in the bank, but they still are needing to be on stage. I mean, you go down to the Laugh Factory, Tim Allen's there. Like
I've noticed, and Kevin Nealon.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's, and so it's a comfort, you know, and you see that someone like Lewis Black was kicking around for so many years, and then he became somewhat popular and famous, you know, at a later age. And that's the best kind of career to have.
Well, I think what's really interesting about comedy is that I think funny is funny. Mm-hmm. And if you can connect in a way, it doesn't matter the age.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. I'm not trying to like convince myself of that.
Well, the thing is people tend to think, oh, if I don't have a career like Chris Rock, then I suck. And it's like, you kind of have to accept what you're bringing to the table. Like, no, not everyone's going to be Chris Rock. Rock is barely Chris Rock. You know what I mean? Like, everyone brings a different thing. And so you have to be comfortable with that.
This is something I wanted to talk to you about, Felicia. You made the choice to kind of change your persona, or perhaps your life situation. And as you mature, your persona changed. But regardless.
Like everybody. You're
right.
Not the same person you were when you're 22.
No, thank God.
Yeah.
We'd both be in a lot of
Jinx.
Trouble. Yeah. So as you mature, you change. Now, there's a... Being a comic, there's a sense of wanting to, there are different roads. And one of them is, oh, I want to do TV. But TV, you generally speaking, the networks, you still need to be kind of clean for
right,
the most part.
Right.
So my question is, like, for myself, sometimes I run dirty.
I'm pretty filthy still.
And my head just goes there.
Right.
So I can write the clean joke. It doesn't excite me as much.
Right.
And my natural state is dirty, kind of, you know? So I sometimes question, do I just say, I'm just going to go the dirty route where the chips fall? Or is it best for a comic to get their TV set, do their TV, and as that builds, then they have the freedom to do whatever they want?
Well, everyone's different, number one, obviously. Number two, you have to do what you find funny, or it's not going to be funny. But number three is, you know, it's a business, and you have to be able to do everything.
So you have a clean set.
Oh, yeah, you have clean stuff, and you know, I don't have as much clean stuff as the dirty stuff, because the dirty stuff is what I find fun. It's just my taste and humor.
Well,
but you have to still manage a clean set, you know. I mean, there was time, like when I started getting back into comedy, and Jamie at the Laugh Factory was doing like a he sometimes does these.
Sorry to interrupt, but Jamie is Jamie Masada.
He's the owner of the Laugh Factory.
And he's a legend out here as one of
them. Yeah. Okay. And he does cool stuff. He does some cool stuff. And he was doing like he'll call you up and he'll say, we're doing a marathon for like a hospital thing, and we're gonna videotape it live, and people are gonna see it at the hospital. And then you get there, and he's like, "Yeah, it's for the children's ward." And it's like, Jamie, you know. And he's like, "Yeah, do 40 minutes." I don't have 40 clean minutes for children. And then he looked at me, and I was like, kind of freaking out. And he was like, "You've been in this business how long, and you don't have 40 clean minutes for children?" And on one hand, you want to just be like, "Hey, fuck you, Jamie," but on the other hand, you know what, my man, you are absolutely right. Yeah. I should have 40 clean minutes for children. You're absolutely right. And when he said that to me, it really changed how I thought about it, because nowadays you have to be able to do all of it. You don't have to be a rock star at all of it, but you have to be somewhat competent, you know, or maybe not dirty, but have such rocking clean material that you could follow any filthy comic and it wouldn't matter.
No, I think you are so right. And you know what I heard in your answer that really resonates with me? This is about being professional.
Oh, yeah.
It's not about what one as a comic may like to do.
Yeah.
It's like anyone, if someone's a lawyer, they know the law.
Right,
I mean,
right.
They may not like a certain part of the law, but they know because they have to know.
Right.
I mean, it's not even a question.
Yeah.
And I think a great comic, if one's truly a great, can do it all in that sense.
Yes.
I don't know if this ever crosses your mind, but sometimes I'll look at a certain type of comedy and I'll be like, oh, I could never, that's just not me. That's not the kind of comedy I do. And therefore I'll be like, I'll question maybe my comedy overall, like, And what amazes me is I look at comedy, and I've answered that by, like, in sports, you can be a great NBA player, but you'd be horrible in football.
Right.
So you can be a great athlete. And I think a comedy is like that. There's so many different types of comedy.
I think of it like a basketball team. Like, it's basketball, but someone's better at being a forward. Someone's better at being a center. You know what I mean?
Right.
Someone's better at rebounding the ball.
That's also a really good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you. You said you're in 1 minute. I don't know if this is even possible, because this is what I couldn't get from your story researching you.
Uh-huh.
I want you in a minute.
Mm-hmm. In 1 minute.
Because any longer, it would probably get bogged down. Just the highlights, army brat traveling around.
How I got into comedy?
Getting to today, you sitting here in this chair.
Okay.
Starting now.
My father was in the army. I was born on the day John F. Kennedy died, and we traveled all around. He went to Vietnam. My parents got divorced. I ended up in Colorado when my mom married another GI. And then my mom was very sick, and then they got divorced, and then we were on welfare. And then I became a stripper. And when I was a stripper, I made a comic, and he challenged me to do comedy, and I didn't want to lose a bet. So I did comedy. And then I was like, fuck, I want to do comedy. So I broke up with him. And then I went to LA and I did comedy. And then I did comedy for 15 years, and then I got married, and then I had kids, and then I didn't have sex for 5 years, so I got divorced. And then I did comedy again, and that's my story. Oh, my God.
I think you made it right in 60 seconds.
Oh, really? That's such a dumb story. But
no, it's really actually interesting. I love that you worked food stamp in. Did not
food stamps,
hear that.
Yeah.
And the stripper thing.
And stripper thing, yeah.
And by the way, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Felicia Michaels. If you do want to give us a call, the number is 800-893-9562. 800-893-9562. And I'm Vic Cohen. This is Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question. And speaking of It's a Fair Question, I wanted to know, you talked about being a Playboy model. What kind of money did that pay?
Oh, I don't think of it as being a Playboy model. I don't. Cause that to me, the Playboy model is someone who was like Miss December, who, you know,
you're Miss everything.
Oh, you are so full of it.
I
got $25,000. Wasn't a lot of money.
That's a lot.
To me, it was, you know, I just won Star Search. So I was like,
it was the '90s. What did you win on Star Search? 100?
100,000. Yeah.
Wow. If you just waited a few decades, it could be like 500,000 or something.
I know.
Have you ever thought about doing a reality show like that?
Of like
anything, like America's Got Talent.
When I first got back into it, I did Last Comic Standing, but I only made it past one round.
I auditioned.
Not even a good round, yeah.
Okay, well, looks like we've got a caller. We've got a caller here. Go ahead. Who is this?
How you doing? Is that Vic?
Yes. Hello. Who is this?
How you doing, Vic? My name's Bart.
Hey, Bart. Thanks for calling. How are you tonight?
I'm great, man. Great show.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask Felicia if she had ever taken pictures of naked women before.
Oh, that's interesting, because Felicia is a photographer.
Yeah, I have.
And are you looking to get copies of them, Bart? Or?
No, I have to just, you know, I'm listening to the show and I hear you talking about Playboy, and then I figured, you know, usually people, you know, you never know.
Right.
You like taking pictures with other people.
Well, when I stopped doing comedy, I did photography very seriously for a long time, and I actually am working on a book, because I did a book of photography on comedians called A Comic's Eye, and it's a black and white backstage look at the whole process of comedy. But I mean, I have photographed naked women, but it wasn't in a sexual way at all, like that. So,
well, thank you for the call, Bart. That was a good question.
Right,
it was kind of out there.
Now,
it was an interesting question.
Work, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Keep listening.
All right, bud.
Great.
Later.
Thanks, Bart. You know, you had mentioned, Felicia, about you slipped in your story about 5 years of no sex during a marriage.
Oh, yeah.
What was that about? Why?
Just not even
with yourself?
Not even with myself.
No,
I know. I'm not a big masturbator.
Really?
So,
why
is
that? We got to change that.
I know.
I like how I'm involved suddenly.
You
find yourself boring?
My thing, no. Boring.
Yeah, I mean, you don't turn yourself on enough to masturbate?
I'm not a big masturbator, you know. I'll do it, but it's just like, meh.
Really? Yeah. It's just taking care of business?
It's just taking care of business.
Right.
But I can bring it, Vic, the other way around. No, I'm totally kidding.
Yeah.
I don't even own a vibrator. I never used a vibrator on myself. I think vibrators are wrong, you know, because I read the longer you use one, the less sensitive you become down there. So like one day you're at home using the vibrator, the next day you're at the hardware store using the paint shaker. There's a joke.
Right where you know. I know. Yeah. And actually, I had a clip with that, but I'm not
going to. Oh, no, you can't play it, right?
But I love that joke.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's like what is your style in writing? Because mine is, I heard this years ago and I just love it. And the idea is to use the truth when writing. I try and keep this in mind, especially with stories.
Uh-huh.
Use the truth as a springboard, not as an anchor. Because a lot of comics, when they're writing jokes, stories, get very married to the truth. And I think it's very helpful to use it as a springboard, but not as an anchor where I'm too married to every little detail. Do you have any edicts like that or philosophy when it comes to your writing?
Well, with my writing, because my comedy is a lot of it's based on my life and things that go on in that. So I do like the truth springboards it, but then when it springboards it and then you get kind of lost while you're in the air, like kind of figuring out how to full circle the joke, then I find it is just kind of better if you just stay a little married to the truth.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Tie it up.
Yeah.
Then
like,
go back to the
like
truth.
Sometimes you think, oh, I'm going to write a joke about this, and then you are researching all this shit, and then you get to this point where you're like, why don't I just write the truth? You know, and then that's what's funnier.
Right.
You know?
So. Yeah, I mean, the truth is, for me, what also I like about it is that it's a part of who I am, is my story.
Yes.
And, you know, where I think that one of the beauty of comedy, part of the beauty of comedy is that each comic brings out their own life in them as who they are as a soul and a human being. And
yeah, but there are some people, like when you were saying that, like Bill Maher, like, what do you really know about Bill Maher?
Well, there are different types of the kind of comedy I do.
Right.
And I tend to gravitate towards.
Yeah.
I mean, when I see Bill Maher and hear him, I mean, I think he's very talented. I think that he's angry. That's a sense I get.
Right.
I don't know if that's true or not.
To me, it's always like, I'm always so like impressed by people who can do comedy and not talk about themselves.
And I'm kind of the opposite, because I think that it's easier to do jokes about anything in the world, but it's harder to be vulnerable. Not that it's hard for me, but for many. And so, but I think it's all, if you can connect either way, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there isn't one that's necessarily better than the other.
Right.
Now you're single. And what kind of man are you looking for? And how is single, how long have you been single?
I've been single 5 years.
Okay, so you had no sex for 5 years. Yes. And you've been fucking like an animal for five.
I'm not saying that, but you ain't wrong.
Three times today in this studio. What's it been like, and what were the surprises being a single woman in Los Angeles?
Well, you know, I'm no spring chicken, but the surprise is how active I am, you know.
Sexually?
I'm not just talking about sexually, just dating, you know, that if you're still interested in having an adventure, it's certainly one can be found. Yeah.
So you're enjoying it?
I am enjoying it. You know, I have kids, and I was actually having, it was my son's birthday yesterday, and I went to dinner and with some of his friends and a father, and who's a good friend of mine now, and who's also single, and we were...
Wait, the father...
The father of one of my son's friends, and he's a single fella, and he is quite successful and cute, and we're just friends.
Not the kid, the father.
The father.
Just to be very clear.
The father. I think people could understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know.
And,
I know, so
he was talking about how, you know, it's hard to go out with women for him because women his age want to have kids and want to tie him up, or he just wants to focus on his kid. And I said, yeah, you know, when for me... I enjoy going out, but people think that you want to get married as a woman. And for me, I just want to, I want to enjoy myself, but I just want my kids to get out of the house. You know, like I don't look for getting married, you know.
Ever?
No, I don't, maybe not. Maybe not. Yeah.
Now, since your comedy is sometimes very honest and a bit dirty, how do you keep your, how old are your kids, your boys?
They're now 12 and 13.
So how do you keep them away from your comedy?
Well, I'm lucky because they go to a school where quite a bit of people are either comedy writers, there's a few comedians, the parents, and there's it's some actors. And so I, when I got back into comedy, I actually sat them down and I said... And their father is an entertainment manager of comedians. So they have been around comedy and everybody. They have been around everybody. And sometimes it sucks. Like they went through a huge Gabriel Iglesias phase and Gabriel Iglesias this and Gabriel Iglesias that. And I love Gabriel Iglesias, but you don't want your kid to be on you about it all the time. You
know?
And so they're pretty knowledgeable about comedy. But when I started back to comedy and it was getting pretty serious again, I sat them down and I said to them, you know, because I'm a woman and what I say is very questionable, you're going to have a lot of people, if they hear it, come up to you and make fun of you and say that maybe I'm a naughty person for saying those things. But I want you to understand, if I was a man and I was saying these things, your friends would come up to you and they'd be looting. They'd say, yeah, that's cool. And they'd shake your hands. Or if I was an actress and I was acting out the words, you know, that I wrote, or if an actress was acting out what I wrote, they would say, oh, it's a good actress. But because you're coming up with it, you're writing it and performing it, they think that's part of your character.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small part of my character. But it's not all of me. And so just know that that's going to happen. You know,
did it or has it happened?
Not so far yet. And kids are, you know, aren't tame like how we were in a sense. They see a lot of stuff, you know. Like I used to worry a lot about the Playboy thing. What would they think when they found out the Playboy thing? And when I got back into comedy about 3 years ago, I worked a club. And I walk into the club and someone made a huge poster and was like, from Playboy. And Playboy is so fucking long ago. And I was like, oh, how embarrassing. But I did roll that poster up at the end of the week.
Because
it was quite a lovely poster. And then I hid it in my my office. And I was having a family barbecue, and my little one, you always have one kid that wants to sneak into everything. He found it. And in the middle of the family barbecue, he came up to me and he's like, "Mom, were you in Playboy?" And I was literally like carrying the meat to the barbecue. And I was like, "Ugh." And he's like, and I go, "Yes, I was in Playboy." And he goes, and then he goes, "Weren't the most beautiful women in the world in Playboy?" And I just kind of stood there and I was like, "Some people say that, yes." And then he goes to high five me and he's like, "Cool." And he ran off. So for 10 years, I thought, "Oh my God, how am I going to tell my children?" When the fact is, like, it's all changed, you know, like
right.
When I did it, yeah, little kids would have been like, "Ew." But now little kids are like, it's so tame compared to what they are constantly being thrown at, you know?
Right. No, that's great. Now, when, hold on a second. Oh, I don't know. Our board operator suddenly looked like she was walking in. No? Okay. Listening to your life story, you know, there is this, the Playboy thing, then the stripper part of your life. And there's this, let's say, like a sexual energy. About, is there something, where does that come from? I mean, were you like really sexual as a kid, or is it just, do you ever think about that? Or is there something that happened like that makes, that created that persona?
Right.
Was there energy in the house growing up, or like a sexual energy, or?
Are you asking if I was molested?
That's like to be. Okay, let's go there. Were you molested?
No.
A lot of strippers were. It is a fair question.
Yeah, my grandpa did try to touch me once next to the swamp cooler in the hallway of his trailer, but I ran away and I was the youngest cousin. So my older cousins didn't fare so well. So I was able to run away. No, I know I was able, but I remember being next to the swamp cooler as he tried to touch me. And I
ran
away.
God.
But no, I think I was one of the last of my girlfriends that lost my virginity. But I think when I started doing the stripping, it was such a lifesaver to myself and to my mother that.
Because they needed the money? She needed the money?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, she was in a... it's a true story. My mother was in a wheelchair and she was on welfare. And, you know, I will say this. When I went and did photography, I worked with as an assistant to this guy named Michael Greco. And Michael Greco did, like, the X-File poster, and that whole style was Greco style, and it was a very 90s style. And he did a coffee table book about the AVN Awards, the Adult Video Awards in Las Vegas. And it was my job as the assistant to go and to call the actresses off the floor, the convention floor, and to come. And he did a portrait book on the adult porn industry. And you see that some women are able to be porn stars and it doesn't affect their soul. And there are some women that are just super professional and it's sexual and it's a business and it doesn't hurt them emotionally. And then there'll be other women that you're, you know, bringing to get photographed and it's 10 in the morning and they're drinking, you know, like it looks like a Slurpee cup, but it's pure vodka in it or whiskey in it, you know, and you're like, it affects that person. And for me, I don't think sex is a bad thing. And it saved my mother and me being able to strip. I mean, it was a life-saving event. You know, it changed the course of my life in a positive way. And I think there's more women that can say that than cannot say it. You know, like from being a stripper, yes, women were damaged, but I wasn't one of them. But I also saw there were a lot of women who went on and led successful lives. You know, it didn't affect them. And it's just how you're born and what works for you. You know what I mean?
No, that's really cool. I mean, I like what you're saying.
It's true. Like, you know, like you, everyone knows a girl that was, you know, slept around since she's 14 and, you know, till she was 36 and it didn't affect them. And then you see a girl that lost her virginity when she was 19. And by the time she was 23, she was a fucking wreck because of it. You know what I mean? It's just how you are as a person, whether it affects you that way or not, you know,
right.
It has nothing to do with how you were raised or what religion you had. Just people are different. And so for me, it didn't affect me in that way for me.
Okay. Well, that's really, it's an interesting perspective that I haven't heard. And it was.
But wildly, I could take my clothes off and all that kind of stuff, but I hate to be in a bikini out in the sunlight. You know, I mean, I would stab myself in the face if I had to do that.
We almost are done here.
Yes.
We got about 45 seconds. Is there anything we haven't shared or you haven't shared that you'd like to in 45 seconds?
In 45 seconds.
Is there somewhere you're going to be performing or where can people
contact you? I'm going to be tomorrow night at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank.
And you're frequently there, correct?
And I'm frequently there. And I have a podcast called She Said What. I have a podcast that's 113 episodes on iTunes called Beauty and the Beast with the very funny Joey Diaz. You can still download that. Or you can download She Said What on iTunes.
Great. Well, Felicia, thanks so much
You're
for
very welcome.
Spending
you,
an
Vic.
Hour with me.
Thank
it's
you.
Been so much fun.
Thank
and
you.
I want to thank all of you for listening. Again, I'm Vic Cohen, and this has been Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question. Look forward to seeing you again next week. And thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen. And